Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Hello, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Rick Hopkins. Good to be with you again today. We're going to be talking a little bit today about some current activities. Of course, this show is pre-recorded, so it's Wednesday now. A lot of things can happen between now and Sunday, but we're going to talk about what just happened today or yesterday, and that was the appointment of the Supreme Court Justice. Our panel today, if you were listening to our show last Sunday, we have a new member on our panel, and that's Diane Ruffino. Diane Ruffino studied constitutional law under Judge Napolitano, and she's going to help us understand a little bit about how this Supreme Court appointment stuff works or doesn't work, depending on your viewpoint. We also have with us some of our regular panel members. We have Howie and Rainer James.
Hey, Eric.
We have Gladys Sussell with us.
Hello.
We have CCTA's chairman, Don Murdoch, with us. And we have Nancy Brinkley. She's on our
National Security.
Thanks, Rick. It's great committed. To be here tonight.
So, Diane, talking about the Supreme Court appointment, Donald Trump made a promise to the American people, and that was that he would go out and find the best judge in the country that would uphold the Constitution. 1 to 10, how'd he do?
Ten being the best, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely a 10. He hit a home run with this one.
Well, tell us what you know about him.
I guess everybody knows from the TV, but he's a conservative. He ranks probably highest on a Scalia-like scale.
Yeah, that was fun the way they started talking about how
Scalia-like. Yes. Yeah. Scalia-like. But actually, he is a little bit better than Scalia.
Yeah.
As far as his views. He is a true conservative. He is a true originalist. He believes the meaning of the Constitution is defined when it was ratified by the states. And if you want to alter or amend it, you don't, kind of read new meaning into it like the progressives do. That is a living, breathing document. And it's up to the judges to update it from term to term. He's a true originalist, and if you want to change it to update to, new norms, you amend it through the Article 5. It's the process that's provided. And he is very limited government type of guy. Judge Napolitano was pretty good. I always listen to Judge Napolitano. And he was looking at Hardiman, I think it was Hardiman and Gorsuch. Mm-hmm. And he said, actually, all the ones on the list were excellent. But between the two, he thought those were going to be the two top choices. And he said, if I had to choose, he goes, Gorsuch is probably just a little bit more conservative than Hardiman because he is a little more skeptical of government than Hardiman. So we really have someone that's as best as you can as Scalia and probably even a little bit more skeptical of government.
More Scalia than Scalia.
More Scalia than Scalia. That's good. Yeah. Right, so he's made his name, or he's known for being very originalist thinking on religion, which is probably perfect for this era we're in now because religion is under attack.
Yeah.
And Hardiman is probably known for his stance on the Second Amendment, which is also something we could use right now. But I think Trump hit a home run with this, and I loved. During the election, when they would say Trump is an idiot, right? What does he know? He's a businessman. He just talks. He has no sense of politics. He has no sense of government. No sense of the law or the courts. And then here he comes, and he does know. He gets it. If I can just bring up abortion real quick, his view is that abortion, that entire decision, Roe versus Wade, should have never come down that way. It should have come down that this is a decision for the states. Mm-hmm. And that is right. Perfect. That is exactly what it should have come down.
Right.
So, you know, for all this hype and all this name calling, Trump gets it. Trump gets what we need on the court. He knows what the decisions inherently mean. And I applaud him for it.
Well, I heard today in an interview that I'm trying to remember, might have been Ted Cruz. But anyway, they said that through the process over the past couple of months, that he's been bringing them in. And he told them, this is what I'm looking for. And he got feedback from them. Recommendations to Judge Napolitano.
He was there, yeah. He was called.
Ted Cruz was fulsome in his praise.
Oh, yes.
Yep. He was.
Yes, absolutely.
So it wasn't that he just arbitrarily made this decision on his own.
No.
They're not used to being involved in the process.
Right.
And they're all amazed at how much attention he gave to them and allowed them to be a part of the process.
Out-politicking the politicians.
Right.
But that's the true mark of a successful politician.
Of course.
You know, is to surround yourself with
good people.
With the best of the best.
Right. Yeah.
And to listen to them, right?
It's also the mark of a great leader because he said he wants this person because he's chosen this person to do the job because he has confidence this person can do that job well. And he's not going to micromanage him. He's going to let him make some
decisions. Good people into positions and give them enough elbow room to do their jobs and do it
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. I'm thoroughly impressed with that.
Really fascinated me was when he was talking about Homeland Security and waterboarding, and he made the comment, well, I think waterboarding works, but it's the decision's not going to be up to me. Kelly will be making his own decisions, and he doesn't seem to be in favor of it. So he's not trying to put his own way of doing things in each area. It seems almost as if he's looking for people who are better and have more depth than he does in each area of responsibility and giving them the elbow room to be the best of the best.
Trusting that they'll do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, Mary and Bob Griswold have joined us, and I'd like to get Mary's viewpoints on this appointment. Mary?
Well, Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse was on Twitter this morning because he had gone over to the Supreme Court to talk to the protesters. And one of the things that some of us have noticed about left side of the political spectrum protesters is that they always seem to have manufactured signs. Now, I'm a child of the 60s. I always had to make my own sign. And
the spontaneous things that have these already made signs. Right?
Yes. Yeah. So he gets over there, and there are protesters, and they have these pre-made signs that say, stop. And then they had to fill in the name with a magic marker on a blank line, right? And he compared it, he called it a Mad Libs protest. Because they were all set, it didn't, and the lesson here is it didn't matter who was nominated.
They were going against whoever.
They were going to protest.
Stop somebody.
The other thing that he pointed out on Twitter again is he said, by the way, protesters, among those who were in the Senate when Gorsuch was last unanimously confirmed were Obama, Biden, Clinton, and Schumer. So what has changed? What has changed? I mean, that was 2006 when he was confirmed to the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. He's done a good job there. No one has any complaints of him. What has changed?
Well, I think we all know what has changed, and that's they are not in power anymore.
Yes.
They don't know how to handle that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's called a temper tantrum.
Yes. And on these signs, you know, I've seen several times here recently there was an announcement made, and the next day there's a protest, and all across the country are these signs.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's financing that.
Well, we can take an educated guess as
well,
to who it is.
I know George Soros is probably the primary
one. He's the primary suspect.
I thought I already saw one thing on circulating around on social media that said it was Soros was behind it, and 30 organizations that he supports that it distributes through?
I think right. it was closer to 40.
It could be. I mean, right. I might have been 60 and I'm being conservative. Okay. Who knows? I mean,
you are conservative. Yes.
Again, like in the Women's March, all the protesters there, I watched them. They were in Washington State. They were in Washington, D.C. They were in Texas. They were all over the mm-hmm. country, or actually around the world. And they all had these signs. And all of them that were being interviewed had the same three or four talking points to say. Somebody's got to be orchestrating that.
Well, the interesting part about that was that I have heard, now I can't confirm this, that the Women's March was organized last summer to be a victory celebration for Hillary Clinton.
Yes. Yep.
Yes. So I suspect they had to remake some signs or had to do some work on that.
Well, with George Soros' money, but, they could afford it. Yeah.
But they were ready. I mean, the protesters were ready. It didn't matter what the event was. The protesters were ready. And we saw that in Massachusetts when we lived there. We worked on a campaign for a conservative candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives. There are conservatives in Massachusetts. And at one particular point, there was a debate. The unions showed up with pre-printed signs. They took over the parking lot, so we couldn't get into the parking lot for the debate. We had to park across the street. Well, I can walk across the street. I can handle that. And they were very much trying to create a newsworthy event, some kind of a fight or conflict that would make the news. Well, most of the audience in the debate was over the age of 50 and generally over the age of 60. And all I could think of when I watched the taunting and the nastiness was, you're going to run into somebody who's going to say, be quiet, Sonny, or I'll hit you with my walker. But it was, I mean, and these were, the union members were told they had to show up, they were paid, and they were the protests. So it's not new, it's not, it's countrywide, I suspect.
Right.
And it's where we are. Now, Chuck Schumer at his Brooklyn apartment is being protested right now by the left for not being left enough. So they're getting a taste of their own medicine.
That's poetic justice. Well,
yeah, yes, it is. It is. It's ironic.
Chucky's going to have to build a wall around his house.
Well, Rick, this evidence is a plan, right?
Yeah.
And the plan is that they're just going to protest everything Donald mm-hmm. Trump does and make it seem like that Trump is just horrible. He's mm-hmm. doing horrible things, and they're not going to let up.
Well, just like our own Senator Tom Tillis, they haven't got the message that it was a mandate.
Yes.
Well, certainly was. Diane, you mentioned a few minutes ago that the openness of the process of the appointment to the Supreme Court. Tell us a little bit about the process itself. You piqued my interest, but we kind of dropped the subject somehow.
Well, let me interrupt there, Hal, just for a moment and give you background on the Supreme Court, and then Diane can pick up from that.
Okay.
Article 3 of the Constitution establishes the federal judiciary. Article 3, Section 1 states that the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. Although the Constitution establishes the Supreme Court, it permits Congress to decide how to organize it.
Oh.
Congress first exercises power in the Judiciary Act of 1789. This act created a Supreme Court with six justices. It also established the lower federal court system. Right. So, Diane, you can comment on that.
Well, first of all, to this transparency, I want to thank Donald Trump for putting out the list.
He listens to the show. Right?
He put out the list. And, you know, this goes, in my mind, to a contract. You give, and even to going to the doctor. It's full disclosure. You know, I want to know everything to make the best choice. And, you know, I want the doctor to tell me what my options are, what the side effects are. When I go, sign for a student loan, I want to know what my paybacks are, the time period, interest rates, all that kind of stuff. Donald Trump is asking for our vote, and he's telling us what he'll do, what he promises. And he went into specifics if I get elected, these are the judges, I will appoint one of this list.
20.
Like 20. Right. So, but he gave us as much information as possible. And that's why we voted for him. And he was the first to acknowledge that the number one issue why people voted for him was his promise to appoint one of those judges from the list.
Right.
So he's, you know, he's always, well, you know, I keep my promises and blah, blah, blah. But he did. He made the list known. He stuck to his promises. He kept his promise.
How refreshing.
Yeah. Yes. So this is as transparent as government can possibly get. And I don't think we've seen that. I know we haven't seen that in 8 years, at least.
No. No. So full disclosure for this group, and I think most all of them in here, if not every one of us, were not originally Trump supporters.
That's true.
I wasn't.
Okay.
That's true.
And but we gave the man a chance. We listened to him. We've been keeping an eye on him. We plan to hold him accountable. And so far, he has done what he said he would do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, he's a businessman. He knows how, I remember my family grew up, they did $1 million worth of business on a handshake. And that meant more, a man's word. And that's the number one thing they want to do is discredit his integrity and his word. And that is the one thing that is true about him. And that's what the media has been so attacking.
Right.
The, biggest commission I ever earned in my life, there was no written contract involved. I did it on a handshake, and people call me a fool. It worked out very well, but I knew the character of the person whose hand I was shaking.
The left, their biggest issue with Donald Trump was that, you know, and he's a celebrity, he's an idiot, he talks off the cuff, he's rude, but here he is at every step. He is honoring his word. The one thing that they could tear him apart is character. His character has remained intact. And I think all this and the people, and steadily his, you know, his approval rating is going up and up and up. And they're going berserko. Like I said before, this
they're going on feelings and personality, not on deeds and true conviction and integrity. And it's just a different battle they're stuck in.
Let's remember he brought back one of the themes of one of his television shows with the appointed or the stand-in attorney general and said, you're a liar.
Hip, hip, hooray.
And, of course, the left went crazy over that.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody came out, who was it, Chuck, and said it was a
constitutional crisis.
No, it was a massacre or something.
The Saturday Night Massacre.
Yeah, Saturday
they compared it to Nixon's firing of Archibald Cox, and there was no comparison.
Oh.
If you were in business and you told your employer if you told your employer, I'm not doing this because I'm doing it my way, how long would you keep your job?
You wouldn't.
Not long.
And see, what people need to understand, because the media has twisted it like they have everything else, is she wasn't fired for disagreeing with Donald Trump.
No.
She was fired for refusing to uphold the law. These are laws that are already on the books. Okay, now the previous administration got away with it 8 years. They totally ignored the law. The immigration laws, everything, you know, laws are there to protect our borders. Laws are there. This one with the what they're calling the Muslim ban. Those were laws that were put in place by the Obama administration. They'd already done that back when Iran and Iraq. They've already used that law before. They did it themselves.
I think it
but
was
now
regulation.
All of a sudden, it's the worst thing.
And there were no protests last time.
That's right.
There weren't.
Yeah.
Nancy, you had your hand up.
I'm just wondering, you know, one of the reasons they fired it, did this lady take an oath and refuse to support her constitution? And so that is the rule of law. And isn't that what these protests are really about? It's really about not the religion, but the law, the Sharia law versus the law of the Constitution. Isn't that part of this battle that we're dealing with?
It may be. As far as I know, since she was a government employee for that position she was in, she had to take an oath to uphold and support.
And if she didn't, she broke that oath. That's
right.
That's really a serious thing. That's going her word that is broken against somebody who's kept their word, integrity, honor, again.
Right. Mm. And people aren't used to seeing that now.
Right.
Well, I just call it plain insubordination.
That's another term.
Not trustworthy, not dependable, not a voice of the people, right. Going against the nation. Boom, she's got to go.
Right.
And so he did the right thing. He sent a message out there. if you don't uphold your oath, that's it. So.
And I think that's a clear message, you know, saying the time of disobeying the law is over.
Right. Yeah, new sheriff in town.
New sheriff in town, exactly.
Right. And there haven't been any new laws made yet. Nope. Now, he's written some executive orders, but what were they? And talking about new laws being made, Diane, I want to go back to the constitutional thing. Mm-hmm. You mentioned abortion. How did Roe versus Wade become a law?
Well, first of all, Roe versus Wade is an opinion. Okay, you know, I don't like to use the word decision when a Supreme Court or any court issues its opinion. It's an opinion, and on the top of the opinion, it says the opinion of the court. Roe versus Wade court decisions, especially the Supreme Court, they like to say that they establish a bright line law. With say the First Amendment. First Amendment speech, you know, there is the bright line law that there are certain types of speech that are unprotectable. You know, there are certain cases stand for something. Roe versus Wade apparently stood for the right of a woman to have an abortion at any time for any reason at all. So unfettered access to an abortion because she has sole determination over
privacy of her body.
Body. And the right to determine her fertility. Okay, so she has plenary power, complete power over her fertility. So that's the bright line of that case and that's the protesters will say.
Why do they call it a bright line?
Bright line just means when they look at similar cases in the future that this is established.
Okay. You mean precedence?
Right. It's yeah.
It's
yeah.
It's sort yeah. of like the line but in it, the yeah, sand yeah, that Obama yeah. kept moving.
Right. Well, you answered my question when you said they issued an
it's
opinion.
It's an opinion. That's all. It's
right.
an opinion.
Because Roe versus Wade. The only way it could have become a law is if Congress
right.
voted on it mm-hmm. or if the American people voted right. on it. So it's never been a law. But if you do research, if you search in the type in Google, how did Roe versus Wade become a law? Yeah. Everything you read, it's the law, the federal law, the law. It's referred to commonly as law. So no wonder the American people think
it's a law. So it's misrepresented all over.
Well, and that's just an example. There's a lot of laws out there that aren't really laws.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really enlightening to me. I really appreciate you bringing that out because I never looked at it that way before. It's an opinion.
It's an opinion.
There's nothing passed by the legislature.
And you know it's an opinion because, like, there's a case called Bowers versus Hardwick, which was 86, I think it was, said a man cannot have sex with another man. It was the anti-sodomy laws.
Mm.
Okay? And it was on the heels of Roe versus Wade, well, a couple of years later, but they wanted to extend that privacy, that right to privacy that's not articulated in the Constitution itself or in the Bill of Rights, but it kind of underpins things like, you know, your Fourth Amendment right to be secure in your home or your right to conscience, okay? So they found this privacy right, kind of that it's there, but not full privacy right. So now they're trying to ride on that privacy right and extend it to homosexual activity. But the court at the time in 86 said, we're not willing to go there. You know, the right to privacy does not extend to same-sex conduct. Oh, well, in 2003, they reissued a different opinion, the same case, the same facts, but the new opinion is, yeah, they have the right of privacy to engage in sodomy. Okay. Well, it had to be opinion because now there's a new opinion. If it were bright line law, you know, they can't just overlook it. So as the court, you know, I don't know, changes, they
law can't
they
be
issue.
A law if it keeps changing.
Yeah,
the meaning.
Yeah.
Right.
So anyway.
Well, in the future cases that come before the courts, do they depend on these bright line opinions to make another opinion?
They can. It depends on the court.
It sounds like it's almost like a law. Then.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the court. It depends on the mindset. Do they want to change? Mm-hmm. Do they want to use this opportunity to change? Or do they want to, you know, escape changing it by just saying it's already settled by a bright line law?
It becomes a law because the judiciary Congress, the legislature
doesn't challenge it.
Doesn't challenge it or do anything right. about it, and we the people are silent on it.
Okay, that makes sense.
Diane, I would like to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
If the Supreme Court, by some miracle, overturned Roe versus Wade. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that that would kick it back to the states. Is that true or not?
All right, so let's just see what Roe versus Wade said. First of all, I wanted to say this. The Congress were cowards, okay? The Roe versus Wade's, Roe versus Wade stood for the fact that, you know, the, a baby is not, a life is not until it's born. And just like Dred Scott said, African-Americans have no rights under our Constitution because they're not citizens. As long as a baby is not considered a life, there's no protections. It has no, nothing under the Constitution, no right to life, has nothing. So at any time, the Congress could have said stepped in and passed a law defining life, and then we wouldn't have to be dealing with this. But they have not done it. And they know the science that's out there. They just, I don't know why they haven't done it. But so, needless, babies have been sacrificed, millions of babies have been
guilty
sacrificed.
Guilty conscience and guilty morality, maybe.
Right. And all they had to do was pass a law defining life.
Yeah.
Right? That's why homicides, right? You shoot a woman and her baby dies. They don't really say, well, you've had a double homicide. Some states are trying to do that. Mm-hmm. But in most cases, no, because this is not a life yet. You haven't taken a life. And homicide, by definition, has to be a taking of a life.
We need to take a break here before we get too long-winded and hear from our sponsors. And we'll be back to continue that discussion in just a moment.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Y'all ready for this? The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
On February 17th, the Craven County Republican Party will hold their annual Reagan Day Dinner at the New Bern Riverfront Convention Center. This year, the keynote speaker is none other than Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. Tickets are $60 or $425 for a table of eight. You may purchase tickets online by going to cravengop.org and following the link, or contact Carl Mischka at 252-626-8199. Don't miss Dan Forrest, February 17th at the Reagan Day Dinner, sponsored by the Craven County Republican Party.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. Again, we have with us today Diane Ruffino, lawyer, an attorney, studied under Judge Andrew Napolitano, and she knows so much about constitutional law. We're very privileged to have her with us. We have Rainer and Hal James, Gladys Sussell, Nancy Brinkley, and Bob and Mary Griswold, and Chairman of CCTA, Don Murdoch. And we've been talking about the Supreme Court appointment and a little history on the Supreme Court. What I'd like to talk about now is the media coverage of this appointment and how negative that's been. On CNN, they were interviewing Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, yes.
And he just allowed her to go on a rant that was totally unbelievable.
She said, for their brilliance.
What do I want to say about this is that elections have ramifications, and here is a living, breathing example of it. The president, in his first appointment to the court, and hopefully his only appointment to the court, has appointed someone who has come down on the side of corporate America versus class action suits on securities fraud. He's come down against employees' rights, clean air, clean water, food, safety, safety in medicine, and the rest. If you care about that for your children, he's not your guy. Can somebody please tell me how you get that? How do you get to that point?
You make it up.
You make it up. That's a good point, Don. You're absolutely
correct. Well, you know what?
Fake news.
I think Donald Trump is brilliant in how he copes with people like CNN. When he made his presentation, first of all, he said he was going to do it. It was known well in advance. There was a big gathering at the White House. So he pre-framed what this man's education background presented him as a very fine person, then allowed him to talk. He showed appreciation for others there. He showed humility. He showed humor so that a very large audience got an initial impression from the horse's mouth and the pointing person's mouth. So he made his own presentation.
Right. That's if you cared enough to tune in, which a lot won't.
Some were commuting. They couldn't tune in.
Right. But they play this over and over and over again on the media. So these low information voters are going to hear it and take it as the gospel. Let me go on with a quote Nancy Pelosi again.
Please do.
Do you have to? Yeah.
This is entertaining.
Gabby Gifford's group, the Group for Responsible Solutions Relating to Gun Safety, said that he comes down on the side of felons over gun safety.
Oh, how ridiculous.
That's because he's pro-Second Amendment is the only thing I think. He's hostile to women's reproductive rights.
Hostile to him, huh?
Well,
he was pretty friendly with him a few times.
Talking about the Hobby Lobby case.
Behave.
The list goes on and on. Criticized progressives for bringing cases that relate to LGBT progress and taking those cases to the court. And then she goes on to say, and I'm talking about Nancy Pelosi, "What saddens me the most as a mom and a grandmother is his hostility towards children in school, children with autism. He has ruled that they don't have the same rights under the IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, that children, that they could reach their intellectual and social advancement under the law. He has said that doesn't apply to them. He comes down against them under the ADA as well. And again, under IDEA. So he hates kids.
Yeah, right.
What lies.
And that's the narrative that we're getting from mainstream media.
And it was never challenged. Her statements were not. That was on the Jake Tapper show. And her statements were not challenged in any way.
They never are.
She's got no credibility as far as we're concerned. But
I heard a caller into one of the shows today. Said that he went back and listened to when Jake Tapper interviewed Ted Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
He said when he interviewed Nancy Pelosi, there were no follow-up questions.
No fact-checking.
Right. But when he interviewed Ted Cruz, and I can't quote you the numbers, but there were in the 20s number of follow-up questions. And, I mean, it was totally different. So they treat people on the right totally different than they do people on the left.
Sounds like
so. If you're a constitutional conservative, you can expect to get raped over the coals. But if you're a wacky liberal, you can just get away with anything, say anything, and nobody in the mainstream is going to call you out on it.
Well, I think the thing that you have to bring up here, and unfortunately CNN is not going to mention it, if this was such a horrible person, why was he confirmed unanimously by a Senate that included Obama, Biden, Clinton, and Schumer?
That's right.
I mean, that's the bottom line.
The other thing I heard today was that the White House has blacklisted CNN.
Yes.
Oh.
They are not allowing any of the staff to talk with or be interviewed by them or go on any of their shows, and they are not recognizing CNN as a legitimate news source.
Wow. So they won't be in the press room?
Well, they said that they were blacklisted. Oh, okay. So.
Well, you know, there has to be a consequence on bad behavior.
That's right.
And they have behaved badly.
They have.
Mm-hmm. You know what I think really is making them angry a lot is this business like the president tweets things out and goes around them, and people start getting the news through social media and tweets and things like that. Before they get a chance to get a scoop on it.
Unfiltered. Right. Yeah, unfiltered. Right. Straight from the horse's mouth. Untwisted, unfiltered.
You want to know an interesting sidebar?
What?
Some of us went to Raleigh today and met with some of our representatives there. And one of the people we talked with was John Bell, the majority leader of the House. And he was saying that the press, particularly the Raleigh types that do behave here much like CNN does nationally, are used to getting press releases about appointments to chairmanships and that kind of thing within the government. They didn't put out press releases this time, except for the NorthStateJournal.com, which is a conservative group. Speaker Moore announced chairmanships from his Twitter account.
That's called a trickle-down theory.
That's right.
It's coming down from Trump to...
and John says it's driving them crazy.
Yes. They can't trust the story before
That's
it comes
right.
out.
Uh-huh.
Diane?
I think this is a good sign because remember Spicer said, the press, everybody has their role. The press keeps the president and government accountable. Well, let's turn the tables. We'll use government to keep the press accountable just as good.
Right.
That's wonderful. One of the changes, didn't they say they were going to do was to have a communications media department or something to handle?
Have somebody to work from that angle to try to make this not just a one-time event, but to do to part of that turning the tables, to organize to do just that.
Again, it's good to hold CNN accountable. But we've got to be careful to protect the First Amendment. Now, the First Amendment does not give you the right to misreport the news,
right?
Obviously. But there's a fine line here that we don't want to cross.
Well, they're not affecting their First Amendment right. No, they're just not allowing
They
can still say whatever they want to say.
They've got to be accountable to slander or libel. And I know so many times they're protected, but there's got to be an issue here where you just get to say lies over and over until you trash someone's life. That's a family. That's not protecting a citizen that is running a citizen in a public office. Right. So if they're slandering and doing lies, there's got to be something to change that.
While we're on this topic of the media and the coverage, let's look at the way they covered the Women's March. I mean, it was ad nauseum.
What Women's March?
And how many times did they have to bleep it? I mean, it was a lot of vulgar language and just terrible, terrible display in public. There were mothers there with their children, and their children were talking just as bad as they were.
They may have been women, but they weren't ladies. That's for sure.
Grandmoms there.
Yeah.
Their kids would have been at the principal's office in school for writing a word like that.
But the media spent several days on that, covering it. Yeah. Now let's follow that up with the Right to Life March. How much coverage did that get? The few pictures I was able to find online, as far as you could see, they were lined up. It was well attended. It was peaceful. I guarantee you didn't hear any foul language unless there were demonstrators nearby.
Clean.
And they didn't leave a mess.
That's right.
Clean, classy.
Ladies.
All right.
Ladies.
Bob, you had?
And it was wonderful.
Just going to say, again, with the Right to Life March, which was a very big turnout of people, there was very little coverage, if any. It was probably derogatory comments about the march. I'm drawing generalities. Yeah. But just to see that there was a peaceful Right to Life march that was a very, very large parade of people. That's one of the advantages of having the internet around, that we got to see what the mainstream press has tried to prevent us from. from seeing.
Well, right. Civility doesn't sell.
You know,
they just doesn't sell.
And it was nice that there was no name calling. They weren't trying to put the other group down or derogate. They only made this very strong point that some of them, so many of them, had issues about women's rights that they wanted to bring. Maybe it was because of real women that were oppressed, and they were refused the time, or I mean, they were just denied to be a part of a woman marching for something. They were right. Saying, "No, you're not a woman."
Yeah. That is ironic, isn't it? Well, let's switch gears again. And in today's Sun Journal newspaper here in New Bern, according to the U.S. Refugee Processing Center website, between January 1st, 2016 to January 26, 2017, 103,310 individual refugees arrived in the United States, and 3,963 refugees came to North Carolina. Now, I'm mentioning this because of the so-called Muslim ban, or the pause in immigration from the seven countries. The largest number, which is getting a lot of media attention too, the largest number of refugees, 9,780, arrived in California, followed by Texas with 9,614. The number of Muslim refugees entering the U.S. was 17,511 between January 1st, 2016 to January 26, 2017, according to the U.S. Refugee Processing Center. Some of those refugees included 10,777 Muslims arriving from Somalia.
Oh my God.
169 from Syria, 936 from Sudan, 301 from Iraq, 31 from Iran, 13 from Yemen.
Do we know Burma?
It doesn't mention Burma. The U.S. has taken in a total of 14,333 Syrian refugees since the 2012, according to the Office of Refugee Resettlement. That is in comparison to Turkey taking in 2.8 million Syrian refugees fleeing the war-torn country. 1 million taken in by Lebanon, 655,446 by Germany, and 35,700 by Canada. So,
and Saudi Arabia took.
Yeah, they're not on the list.
No, they did not take
and
refugees.
And while you mentioned that, in Saudi Arabia is a huge tent city. Mm-hmm. And when I say a tent city, it's not a tent like me and you go set up in the backyard or go camping with. These are huge tents, luxury accommodations, fully air-conditioned and everything. And I forgot how many thousands, 100,000 or more it can house. It sits vacant. It's only used when they have their
Hajj
once a year. So why couldn't they house some of them, you know? That's right. But the reason I bring that up is because of all the media coverage about this order to halt immigration for 90 days from those seven countries and all the harangue that's going on because of that. Not to mention the fact that President Obama had already done it. Mm-hmm. And it was laws that were established while he was in office. So, Mary?
I went looking today to find the demographics of the refugees, and I couldn't find it. And when you see the pictures, it's not women and children.
Right.
It's men.
Of military age.
Yes. Yes. And that disturbs me. I would be much more willing to welcome women and children than I would be willing to welcome men of military age. ISIS has already said that they've infiltrated the refugees. Germany and Scandinavia have had incredible problems because of the refugees. It seems to me we should learn from the lessons of Europe and you know, take another look at this. But I couldn't find the demographics. They're being well hidden.
Right, and there again, the mainstream medium, one of their big talking points on this issue is it was poorly planned and orchestrated. And they've even gotten some of the Republicans to go along with them and agree on that. But no, I don't think so. I think it was perfectly planned and orchestrated mm-hmm. because if you were think back to when he was campaigning, he's saying, why would we tell them when we're going to do something?
Yes.
Why would we warn them that, hey, we're going to be coming on this date? Okay. If he'd have gone and give advance notice that we were going to implement this,
they might have killed a bunch of women, sent the wrong ones in, the Trojan horses.
There'd have been a wild rush coming into the country.
So. I mean, it's like, how many times did President Obama say, we're going to do this mission here on this date? And you just shook your head and said,
he's
oh, my.
He's protecting the enemy.
Well, personally, I'm sorry that a few people, 100 and some, were inconvenienced.
Yeah,
right.
But I am really glad nobody died.
We have to remember when we present this issue, though, it is not a Muslim ban.
Right.
We're talking about refugees from all walks of life, all religions. And, you know,
we are. Now, let me just say, the president did make that mistake. He did actually say ban on Muslims during his campaign.
He sure did.
He said those words.
But he also clarified it later by, saying that it isn't about all Muslims, but it's about Sharia law, which is incompatible with the Constitution.
Right.
And you're talking about a law that will not accept the other one to be...
But that doesn't matter.
In control of the other.
That doesn't matter with the media. If it comes out and they've got that sound bite, that's the only part of it you're going to hear over and over and over
again. We don't want to make the mistake here.
Right. Well, you know, he's learning. He's not been in that position before. Rainer, you had your hand.
Well, actually, Nancy developed my idea. I feel like the business of... First of all, there would be absolutely nothing wrong if religion were mentioned so far as the Constitution is concerned, because all the Constitution says about religion is there will be no state religion.
Right. Religious test.
However, I don't think we as a people are against any religion. However, we are against any religion that carries with it the baggage of something like Sharia law,
right,
which is totally incompatible with our Constitution. So while there may, may well be, I feel confident there are Muslims who would prefer not to live under Sharia law because of their concept of Taqiyya and lying, being responsible to lie to forward the interest of Islam. It makes it very, very difficult to separate out who holds what set of beliefs and whether they are or are not compatible with our Constitution.
And we are a nation of many religions, have been from our founding.
Yeah. It is not per se a religious objection. It is an objection to somebody
who wants to
establish a caliphate and overthrow our government, because that's where they're really coming from, the ones who believe in Sharia law.
But President Trump has pointed out how few Christians are among those
that are able to come here,
and how persecuted they are, to the point of being massacred and mistreated and brutalized and everything else.
Well, I'll go one further. I feel confident that the previous administration discriminated against them when it came to immigration.
Absolutely.
You know, they purposely did not do anything to help those Christians.
I think he's done. You know, he's talked about extreme vetting. He's held the line on that we need to know who these people are, that we have no way of knowing who most of them are. I think he's holding the line.
Common sense. Mm-hmm.
The other group that needs to be given admittance here that the Obama administration ignored is the people who worked with our soldiers as translators in Iraq and Afghanistan, because they are in danger.
Yes.
And they need to be gotten
out of
there.
They recognize that, and they worked on that. They fixed that problem because that was...
They wanted to make sure those got in. Yeah.
Yes.
Remember we had Hamadi?
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Hamadi Jassim?
Ray and I have a personal experience with that, in that our son... who was over there in Afghanistan, and one of his jobs was to try to make friends with some of the Afghanis and get the Afghan people to tell him where ammunition and weapons were stashed. And there was a young man he relied on, a boy really, that he relied on for a lot of that information and saved a lot of American lives that way. And he's tried to get that boy to be able to come to America for several years. In fact, I wrote a letter on a young man's behalf myself asking them to be brought to the United States. And it didn't happen for a long time, but I think in the recent last couple of 3 years it has happened. He has been able to get that boy here. But that boy's life was really in danger. Yeah.
Well, I've got one more comment before we go to break here, and that is all these people, the left-wingers out there, congressmen and senators that are stuck in front of the cameras bashing the process and how it was poorly orchestrated, where have you been in the last 8 years? What did you do to, you know, accomplish anything with it? Nothing. We're going to take a quick break here to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Y'all ready for this? The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
On February 17th, the Craven County Republican Party will hold their annual Reagan Day Dinner at the New Bern Riverfront Convention Center. This year, the keynote speaker is none other than Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. Tickets are $60 or $425 for a table of eight. You may purchase tickets online by going to cravengop.org and following the link, or contact Carl Mischka at 252-626-8199. Don't miss Dan Forrest, February 17th at the Reagan Day Dinner, sponsored by the Craven County Republican Party. As a strong advocate of Second Amendment rights, CCTA is proud to be involved with S&D Gun and Knife Shows. The next S&D Gun and Knife Show will be in Greenville at the Convention Center on Saturday and Sunday, February 11th and 12th. Buy, sell, and trade with Eastern North Carolina's best dealers and enjoy the most competitive prices in the state. Most gun enthusiasts and collectors agree. S&D Gun and Knife Shows are the place to be, February 11th and 12th at the Convention Center in Greenville. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Have you got a topic you'd like to hear discussed on CCTA Wake Up Call? Well, then contact us at cctaxpayers.com or email Hal at cctaxpayers.com. That's Hal, H-A-L, at cctaxpayers.com. We're a conservative talk radio show, but we value your opinion and would love to have you join us. Again, contact Hal at cctaxpayers.com. Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. We're going to wrap it up real quick here because we're almost out of time. Gladys.
Okay. You've probably heard some say that not letting the Muslims in encourages jihad. Well, if Muslims are peaceful allies, why on earth would you assume a simple executive order would turn them into enablers of terrorism?
You want me to tell you what encourages jihad?
Yes.
Being an infidel.
That's right.
That's what
that's
encourages
right.
it. Diane?
I have nothing to add to this. I my only comment, which we were talking about before, is, you know, why, I question why do we want to bring so many refugees in that are incompatible with our Constitution or with our way of life? And the only thing I can think of, because my brain is not moving too fast lately, is you know, we've watched over the years progressives from the beginning of the turn of the 19th century, they are trying to tear our Constitution apart. It's a relic to them, and they have to undo it. They have to undo our norms, our institutions.
then they can outdate this Constitution. They're doing it by their progressive Supreme Court justices through a president like Obama. And if they bring the Muslims in large numbers, well, these are hostile to our Constitution as well. Maybe this is just another way to, in the end, in a couple of years, just finally say the Constitution is useless and then start.
Well, right. I think you're talking about under Sharia law. They don't abide by our laws anyway. They have their own.
Right. That's right.
Okay. And again, we're not talking about the Muslim religion. We're talking about an ideology of Sharia law and the way that that's being implemented all across the world. Diane Ruffino, thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting
Gladys, Rainer, Nancy, Mary, Bob, Hal.
Thank you, enjoyed
being with you all again today. I think one of the biggest problems that we're going to have to get over here is the fact that we cannot sit back because Trump won this election and he's doing all these wonderful things and say, all right, our job's done.
Right.
We cannot return. Right.
Vigilance.
We cannot become apathetic.
Yeah. The fight has only begun.
Our job is beginning.
Yes. We need to be just as well organized and just as active as the left is with the pre-made signs out there. They've already got a plan, and they're executing that plan every day. Every time there's another announcement, every time there's something they don't agree with.
We don't have a George Soros. We'll have to make our own signs.
That's right.
See, that's what we're doing.
Now, I know we're handicapped because usually young conservatives are on the job working, where young liberals are in the streets demonstrating. So we're handicapped. But we can't become apathetic. No. We've got our work cut out for us. Thankfully, right now there's a stay against it, so we're not going to have that election this year that we were going to have here in North Carolina, unless that gets overturned. There is another election coming up in 2018, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
2018. So we need to be identifying good conservatives, constitutionalists, that we can kind of urge them to run for an office.
Would you consider running for an office?
Yeah. You know, y'all talked me into that last year, and it didn't work out too well.
Well, you know, most people who do that, it doesn't come to fruition the first time.
Right. Senator Michael Scully ran 4 times to get elected.
Yes, and look what he's done since.
Well, we'll talk about that further in some other day.
And we encourage young people to come out to our meetings.
We do. And that's the third Tuesday of every month at Stanley Hall Ballroom, downtown New Bern. Go to cctaxpayers.com. You can find out all about our organization. There's contact information there. And we look forward to hearing from you. And we look forward to being with you again next week. That's all for today.
Panicelli's Pizzeria in Riverbend features handmade Italian dishes, lasagna, spaghetti, fettuccine alfredo, stromboli, calzone, and many more. Panicelli's uses only the freshest ingredients, and they have fantastic New York-style pizza in 4 sizes or by the slice. Panicelli's Pizzeria also has great salads and subs. Panicelli's is easy to find. Just head to Riverbend and Panicelli's will be at 40 Shoreline Drive. For authentic Italian food at an affordable price, head to Panicelli's Pizzeria in Riverbend.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org.
You're listening to CCTA Wake Up Call right here on The Talk Station, FM 107.1 WTKF Atlanta. CCTA Wake Up Call is a production of Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, and you can join us here every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. and every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for the best in conservative talk radio in Eastern North Carolina. That's CCTA Wake Up Call.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military. Just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.